Hey, all you sexy bookworms. Welcome to this special episode of Shit We've Read After Dark. This episode features spicy, mature content, and the topics discussed may not be suitable for everyone. Please, take care as you listen. Now, light some candles and make yourself comfortable as we get ready to go deep into this book, that is. We hope this episode is as good for you as it was for us.
Happy Halloween, everybody, and welcome back to Shit We've Read After Dark, a special holiday episode that I can't believe we had to talk Jason into. It's Halloween. It's Halloween, and it's the After Dark episode. You know why? We were setting up a Christmas episode, but not Halloween? What's that about?
There were some other scheduling things at play. That's all I'm going to say. There's some other
but
things.
But Emma, you said, why are we not doing this? And Jason was like, all right, we're doing it, though. So,
to his credit, yes, he was very much on board.
And yes. To his credit, he already had books picked out, ready to go.
He was waiting for it.
He had a list for us the next day.
What? A Halloween episode? I've taken the liberty.
I'm sorry.
I've never thought of this before.
Taken the liberty. Tell me whatever monster you want. It's ready to go.
A monster fucking holiday? Not a monster holiday, y'all. Monster fucking holiday.
On that note, hi, Jason. How you doing?
Hey, Emma. I'm doing great. How are you?
We should do the host introductions. I know how to do this. I know what I'm doing. This is going great.
Cheers.
There you go. There's your drink. Okay. Bella, hi. Hi. How you doing?
Hi, Emma. Thank you for hosting our sacrificial lamb.
You're welcome. Episode. I don't know why every time I have to host, it feels like I've never done this before. And our final host here with us, as always, Laura, how's it going?
Hello. Good. I think this is going to be an interesting conversation tonight.
It'll be a fun one.
Yeah.
We read for our Halloween episode, and perhaps you listening to this also read because you saw it on our socials. We read Monster's Manor by Lee Miller. This is me seeing for the first time that there's an S in this. I absolutely thought this was called Monster Manor. I need to change how I did my reading catalog then. Okay. So this is how well I pay attention. I know what all of our books are called.
We aren't preoccupied with spelling or synopses. We just go into it, you know?
That's fair. I very rarely know much of anything about the books. I did vote for this one. We had a spreadsheet that Rico kindly put together for us that we all got to kind of vote on. And this is where we ended up. So before we get into that, what's everybody drinking? Who's got something fun? I feel like most of it, this is really just a question.
It's always
Jason.
Jason.
What are you drinking?
It really is just
we
me.
Already know
well,
that.
Well, I'm so glad you asked. You know, I'm continuing the campaign to get Barefoot to sponsor us. So here's my bottle.
Excellent.
As you may notice, people listening can't see this, but my co-host can see that it is orange, which, isn't a normal color that you see Barefoot make. That is because I made a pumpkin white wine spritzer recipe. Oh. I added in some pumpkin juice, some vanilla extract, some cinnamon, mixed it with the white wine, put a little bit of sparkling water on top, and here you go.
Is it
you
good?
Made yourself a pumpkin spice
spritzer?
Yeah, pumpkin spice spritzer. It's surprising. I don't know if it's good. It's not bad. I think my taste buds just don't know what to do.
Fair enough. Is it one of those where like you're tasting something and your brain can't like figure out the texture and the taste going together?
The texture is fine because I did strain the pumpkin. So I just got the pumpkin juice. So it is very smooth. But the flavor, my brain is like, there's wine. And there's also pumpkin.
Like separating them in your
head. Yeah, but it's like, why are they together? You know?
That is the question that I asked when I saw you share this in our Discord, your drink recipe. Yeah. I was like, why these two things together?
Why not?
But you know.
Wine, not.
Jason, I give you props for being adventurous with your drinks every time we do these episodes. A lot
Someone
of them I would not think of or even want to try.
Look, if I'm going to get a little tipsy and talk about these books, I may as well make it fun.
I you're talking about that nobody else gets adventurous. I get very adventurous. I try different flavors of the rare fruit.
Oh, what flavor are you drinking now?
Strawberry.
Oh. That's what I have too.
This might is it so good?
It's so good.
My God.
This is my favorite.
Ooh, this also might be my favorite.
It's straight up juice. Like, I don't like the taste of alcohol, which is why I don't drink much. This just tastes like juice.
It's so good.
And you're going to drink it like juice, aren't you?
We'll see.
I think so. Usually you end up drinking, you're like, this is my third glass, y'all.
It's like half a bottle usually, I feel like, by the time we get through this. But they're small bottles.
We need to start measuring the books, not by stars, but by how many drinks Emma has to have throughout the episode.
That might be fair. That might be
fair. I think that's a good gauge for how unhinged a book might be.
Well, I, you know, in that case, we might not have too many glasses this time. We'll get to that. So on that very great segue. Oh, Bella, are you drinking anything, by the way?
No, water. I'm getting ice cream after this. So
boo.
Because it's California. So
it's
we
hot.
Still have ice cream in October. Okay.
It's hot right now.
It's so hot. If you are listening to this not in California, it is 100 degrees where we live today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bad time. And yeah. I know you're listening to this as of October 30th or later. It's probably still 100 degrees here.
Mm-hmm. It probably will be, yeah.
Fair bet, yeah.
I hate it. I'm going to New York next week, and I've just been obsessively staring at the weather because it's going to be like mid-60s while I'm there.
I hate you.
So excited.
I hate you.
So, for our special October Halloween episode, we read Monster's Manor by Lee Miller. Bella, why don't you tell us what this book is about?
Oh, so I have to read the synopsis?
Yes, correct.
Fine. Okay.
That was I'm sorry. That was a great way to ask Bella. Okay.
And the O afterwards. Oh.
Well, because normally we get into like the genres, the trigger warnings. So I was like, oh, I wasn't ready for the synopsis yet.
I'm here to throw you off your game.
But I will do it. Okay. Welcome to Edgar's Acres, where the frights are delightful and the shadows are always watching. Losing my job was bad, but ending up on my witch of an aunt's doorstep as a last resort is even worse. Her offer? Embrace the magic I've always denied and come work for her at our family's haunted manor. The one staffed by monsters who aren't just people in costumes, including two in particular who draw me in immediately. Renwick, my irritating sexy demon who teases and taunts me to the very edge of my sanity, and Silas, the gentle, shadow-cloaked shade who only seems to want to protect me. They've got a history between them that I'm not sure how I fit into, but as the autumn nights grow longer and darker, it gets harder and harder to stay away from either of them. My aunt's given me a deadline: accept my place amongst monsters and witches by Samhain night, or pack it up and head back to the mundane world. Now, I'll have to decide whether I'm brave enough to reach out and claim my two monstrous lovers and the powers I've always feared, whether I'm ready to step into this world of magic and dark desire.
Perfect.
That was really awkward to read. I apologize.
So, Monster's Manor is a paranormal romance. It's fantasy, obviously. It's a novella. This was what, like 200 pages, maybe?
It's about 200, I think.
Ish. Yeah, this came out October 13th of last year, so just about a year ago. And the trigger warnings, as listed on the author's website, are explicit sexual content, brief sexual harassment not between the leads, strained parent-child relationship, historic, parental death, historic and non-graphic, primal kink, and light bondage. So as our non-spoiler, as our sort of primer into all of this, how did everybody, how'd you feel about this? How was this book for you, Jason?
I really enjoyed this book. I don't think it was Halloween-y enough for me. This is not the kind of book I wanted for this episode.
Me neither.
But
I agree.
I had a great time with the book.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. So Bella, you feel very similarly?
Yeah. Very light, very fun, very like dark rom-com-y. Very cutesy, very demure, but it was not Halloween-y enough for me either.
Wow. Laura, how are you on it?
Kind of the same. I it starts out feeling really Halloween-ish, but then that just kind of disappears, and it's really just about the trio. But other than that, I had a really great time.
Yeah, I feel like that. I mean, this is a, I guess you would call this kind of a light and fluffy novella. Sure. I think it accomplishes that very well. It's Halloween-y in so much as like the time period, like it is particularly through October up to Samhain, and even that passes by very quickly with like no fanfare. But yeah, it's kind of just a light, fluffy, cute little rom-com. There's not a whole lot of com, but a little romance novel. It's like a cute and fluffy little romance novella. And I feel like the book did what it set out to do.
Agreed.
That's really all I can ask from it.
There's not a whole lot of com, but there is a whole lot of cum. Ayo!
Whoa.
Not a fan. Not a fan of that one.
Let's get into the spoilers. I need to talk about more things.
I think this is the quickest that we've ever wanted to get into spoilers.
Yeah. I know. I don't know that there's anything like... I feel like this is going to be kind of a very calm discussion in that there's not really any like really, really highs. And there's also not any really, really lows.
I agree.
Sounds about right.
Just kind of fun. So I guess we'll get right into spoilers. We'll get right into if you have not read the book and you would like to avoid spoilers, you can turn this off now and come back when you have and listen to the rest of this in like an hour and a half or however long it takes you to read this. So yeah, I guess we'll move right into it. So does anybody have any spoiler thoughts that they want to put in to supplement your general thoughts on the book?
I still wish we picked a Headless Horseman book. You know,
I know you do.
I'm kind of.
I
with
wanted
Jason.
Something Halloween-y. I wanted something dark and like I wanted to feel like the things that go bump in the night. And this was not it. This was just another monster book. It was almost exactly like the previous book we read.
It's very similar.
Very similar in the sense that even she's a performer, and I was not satisfied reading this for the Halloween episode. Like I said, that remove myself from that. I actually really enjoyed the book, and it's pretty high up there in terms of my overall ranking.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I feel very similarly. Like it was kind of fine. I feel like it did what it set out to do. The book is one thing. It does that very well, and it's good to go. If you're looking for like a really intense monster romance, you're not really going to get all that. You get some stuff. You do get the prehensile tail.
I knew you were going to be happy about that.
Let's be clear. I'm happy about the fact that the tail was not on the ground.
I agree.
That's what I was happy about.
That's true.
I neither like prefer nor dislike a tail in a monster romance. It can be fun, but the tail, I literally never stop thinking whenever there's a tail in a book about the fucking gargoyle book, specifically talking about how his tail was dragging on the ground through the streets of LA. And then using it inside of her. And I was like, no. So I'm always kind of on the lookout for like, if a character has a tail and I'm like, okay, what are we doing with this? And it's just kind of there. So okay, I can choose to believe it's just like a hand.
But I did have a question about his tail because in the cover, he has a pointed tail.
It's like barbed, right?
Yes. But they don't, it's not described that way in the book.
No.
So I was a little confused.
Yeah. I am choosing to believe that it is not barbed.
I don't think it
per
is.
What? Yeah, it kind of, I think it's described as just being like blunted. Like, it's just like a finger.
Yeah, something like that.
It's just like a really
And then
long
I was
finger.
Having a hard time picturing what that looks like.
It's an uncomfortable image I don't like. It's very similar to how I feel about The Cruel Prince by Holly Black and Carden's Tail, which is like flesh colored and weird. And I'm like, I'm just going to pretend I didn't see that this man does not have a tail. I feel like it's the same kind of vibe. It's like if you see a cat's tail with no fur and you're like, ew, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, I've made everybody uncomfortable.
Well, I'm picturing like a rat tail.
Yes.
That's not wrong.
Kind of.
At least it's red, because the guy has red skin, so it's not like human flesh colored, which honestly is much better.
Why are we even flesh colored?
It's demon flesh colored.
Someone needs to write a H.P. Lovecraft inspired smut book and call it Human Flesh Color from Outer Space.
Oh
no,
God,
absolutely
you can
not.
Do that
illegal.
So we've got a couple things going on in this. We do have something of a plot, which I feel like is a good through line through the book.
Yeah.
She has lost her job. Very relatable. She ends up back in her family's area that she doesn't necessarily want to be in. You've got this, like, I feel like the idea of like female main character who has magic that she doesn't want to use is like very common, right? Like, I feel like a lot of stuff that we see in this is like seen it before, it's been done before, but like not necessarily in a way where I was like bored with it. It just kind of felt like, sometimes I think when you see that, it feels comfortable. You're like, I know this. I've been here before. I know what I'm doing here. And I feel like that kind of worked.
I also liked that there was some kind of history for her, and it felt a little bit more like the author spent time with this character.
Yeah, which I feel like, because this is a teeny tiny bit longer maybe than some of our other books. So I feel like some of our others clock in around like 150 maybe. Although I feel like this read really fast.
This one did. Yeah, one I read really this quickly. One fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like my Kindle said 2 hours.
Yeah. But it was a good time. It was a good couple of hours.
It was.
All right. So we've got our two love interests. We've got the demon. We've got the shadow. There, of course, there's a shadow daddy. I'm kind of over the fantasy shadow daddy, like everything of it. But he was sweet, which I feel like was a good way to kind of turn that on its head.
I agree. I really liked Silas, right? I
think his name was. Silas.
He was very sweet. Definitely played against type. Yeah, he was probably my favorite of the two love interests. He seemed just a little less of a caricature.
I like low-key thought he was going to be a soft dom. But then my biggest problem with this book is like the sex scenes were really, there wasn't much to them. They were very short. They weren't very descriptive. Yeah. Like, I feel like in erotica, in romance novels that have a focus on sex, there's so much room for those sex scenes to serve as character development in various ways. And I think it gets very easy to kind of overlook that when you're just like looking for sex scenes. But sex scenes serve a purpose, right? Like, I think one of the things they do is they're a really good chance to do character development. And in this one, they really didn't do much of that. It kind of felt like it was like, we're writing a book. Oh, let's check off a box for a sex scene. And then we're back to writing the book.
Okay. I'm really glad that you brought this up, because that was what I felt that in a lot of ways. Okay. With number one, that the first sex scene was like 60% of the way into the book, I think. So it was a long... Like, we kept getting teased with it. Like, you have some flirtation. And I wouldn't even call that, like, a slow burn. Like, it was, like, it felt like a setup. And then it was taken away.
Yeah.
And then when it did happen, like, the first sex scene with each of the male main characters, yeah, it felt like it was a box to tick off. Like, we were trying to get to the group scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't feel like the same development. And then a lot of the other follow-up sex scenes before the group scene were like off page, like were background. We're like, oh, and then we had sex all week. And I was like, and well, you're not going to tell us about it? We don't get to hear about it? Like how your relationship has developed? So then we're just going to go into like a group scene. And we're just going to have to like, I think the author did recover it pretty well, because there was a scene where they kind of talk about the boundaries and like their relationship and blah, 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 to where I think the group scene made more sense from like a character development standpoint. But at first I was like, this is going to be like a raw dog of a sex scene. Like they're just going into it with no character interactions between the three of them.
Yeah.
Until the sex, like, how is she going to write that? So, yeah, I don't know. I felt like the first couple sex scenes were like right away. I could write them off.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that way about Silas's. I do feel that way about Renwick's.
Yeah,
I felt for like sure, his Renwick. Kind of just felt like, okay, we're having sex now. But something about Silas's felt organic in the sense that it came after the whole confrontation I'm blanking on her name, the main witch, but her fighting off basically the guy who was harassing her and using Silas's shadow to engulf her and power her up. And so there was like already kind of like an intimacy there that set felt organic based on the situation that continued into the sex scene
for me. Yes. I guess for me, I was bored by it. Like it was just a boring scene, the sex to me, that first one. I just didn't really understand
how it worked.
Jason, I was going to make fun of you for not remembering the woman's name, but I also can't remember what her name was. What the hell is her name?
Rosemary? Ophelia?
Rosemary, no, thank you.
Rosemary.
Rose.
Oh, our main character?
Main character, yeah.
You guys forgot the main character's name? Oh my God. That's embarrassing.
I had a whole thing set up. That's okay, I do that too. For like not remembering the woman, and I was like, wait a minute. what the fuck is her name?
Oh my God.
That's hard, I think, sometimes with first-person POV because you're just hearing I, me, my all the time. And I'm like, what the fuck is her name?
We did hear her name a lot. I should have remembered it. It was like the whole Rosemary. Say, no, Rose. Call me Rose. And
Rose, for Rosemary, sure, Rosie.
She hated didn't like Rosie, so she was constantly. Look,
I read this book like 16 hours ago, okay? I can't be expected to remember things.
Exactly.
You started 18 hours ago and you finished it 16 hours ago.
Pretty much. Pretty much. I will say, as we're talking about like the dynamic in the group, this book does exactly the same thing with the MMF relationship that the last book did, which I also think is problematic, wherein there is a sort of mating trope to it. There is a fated mates trope to it.
And I knew you were going to say something about it. Yeah.
And the male main characters, the two gay male characters, cannot be mated until they're like sort of legitimized by having a woman in the group. Mm. And like the fact that we've read two of these that did this back to back, there is a way to write MMF. There's a way to write these sort of mated tropes within poly relationships that don't require like legitimizing queer relationships by adding in somebody who is not the same gender, which is what both of these have felt like.
Yes.
Yeah. I was hoping that we would have gotten more explanation. Like maybe there was an actual reason for this, but there wasn't.
Oh, it's never happened this way before. And I was like, okay. So that's all we get. I will say the one thing that was different about this one that felt less gross to me was the fact that they didn't have a mating connection on their own, Rosemary and Silas. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't like, oh, me, because like with the other book, like it was like me and her are mated.
Yeah. And then we can also
it legitimized. Exactly. But instead it was like, no, the two of you combined is like the only way. To me, that was a little bit more like bisexually affirming, like being like, but at the same time, I agree. I don't like that. Like they had to end their relationship because they didn't have the anchor relationship that he needed to be like a physical person. I didn't love that.
Which also didn't really get explored much, probably because of the length, because it's a novella, and because we're seeing from her point of view. But like this idea that they had a really intense, loving relationship, and the only reason seemingly that they ended it was that it wasn't anchored, and like we never talk about that. And then they very quickly pick it back up once she is part of the dynamic, which I'm like... Yeah. This it straddles that line, especially I think when these books are written by women, of fetishizing gay men, of like they could not exist in a healthy, loving relationship until she was part of their dynamic, until she was she was there to like be partially a voyeur to it, partially involved in it. It does straddle that line, and I think it's one of those things that I don't think is the intention at all. I don't think there's any conscious intention to do anything like that. But when you're a woman writing gay male relationships, there is, I think, kind of a responsibility to keep an eye out for things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because this book both kind of fetishizes gay men, but also condemns them in a way. Because there's that one scene where Rosemary walks in on Silas and Renwick having sex that really felt kind of icky in the sense that it was the only love scene between the guys without Rosemary. And it was cast in a light that made it feel wrong. Like not intentional at all. And I know I'm kind of just picking up on it based on like what we're talking about right now, but it is slightly problematic when the only male on male love scene causes a panic in the main character.
She panics a ton, like really, really intensely.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
No, where, you know, like if this was a porn movie, she'd be like, oh, move over. Let me join in, you know?
That's what I thought we were going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just very bizarre.
Honestly, there were times when she just annoyed the crap out of me, though.
Yeah.
It was a quick line. She's like 23 years old.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah.
A baby.
Yeah. So she doesn't, like, she's a child. And so she's experiencing these certain things and having these really intense emotional reactions. So, like, she freaked out over that first training session where she lost control of her fire. I have no understanding of why she freaked out so much. Like, you're supposed to be training.
Yeah, if her history had been about hurting somebody, I could have seen the freak out, but like she set a cabinet on fire and it didn't hurt anybody. Like, yeah, chill out.
So, yeah. So in it, going back to how she freaked out over seeing Silas and Ren together, I didn't like it, but it also made sense because she did overreact previously.
So it's at least in line. It's consistent with like her emotional state.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But again, I did expect them to, I did think she was just going to join them. But
that would have been.
I mean, honestly, the opportunity's right there. Like, come on.
Exactly.
It's but the like, way that they both, like, it's a full running. She is sprinting away from them. And I'm like, girl, if you don't calm the fuck down, you're embarrassing me. I need you to pack it up, take a breath. She's literally tripping them with magic behind her because they're chasing her. I was like, what is it? What in the Scooby-Doo is happening here? What in the Scooby-Doo? Damn. Okay.
Wait, Reiko, now yeah. You have a new challenge. Find a Scooby mystery ink, like polycule smut book.
I don't know if my childhood would like that, but.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. Challenge accepted.
I don't know if I'm okay with that. Okay, now I am.
Challenge accepted. Well, if you're going to dare me to do
it. Yeah, exactly.
He's like, wait, let me think about it. Okay.
Say double dog dare. Say you double dog dare me.
Nothing, but nothing with Scooby being a furry, please. I can't do that.
Oh, it's going to be Omegaverse.
Look, just, you get what you get, Bella.
No, it's
going to have to be.
No, I want it to be like maybe they form the polycule and then they all adopt Scooby as their baby.
Oh, God.
That's fine.
You're getting real choosy beggar over this. Yeah. Yeah. You get what you get.
Exactly.
What I really want is Reiko to write it for himself and then use a pseudonym, like, I don't know, book-ish R. Rake. I don't know, R. Ake.
Go on to Archive of Our Own. Go on to Scooby-Doo. I guarantee you'll find it. Fan fiction writers have got your back. Every pairing you could ever want exists on AO3.
I'm sure it does. Reiko will find it.
Bella, I just want to point out how proud of you I am that your mind did go there.
What?
To furries.
Now she's aware.
Oh, that is a long.
I mean,
of the things I. Okay. Of the things
about it.
Of the things that I learned in my youth from the sick, twisted children in Davis school systems. I learned about, hentai in like middle school and like seventh grade.
That tracks.
And I learned about furries in high school.
It took you to high school?
I think so. I can't remember if it was, I feel like junior high would be a little too early for the furry thing. Yeah, no, I do know about those things. Unfortunately, my friends were... I had a friend who was making her brats have sex in fifth grade at CDC.
That's how you do it.
And I was like, huh? What?
Have I ever told you guys, this is a tangent, have I ever told you guys that I used to work at a water park that is local to us here? That water park also has laser tag. There was a party of furries one day that I worked there. Like full fursuits. They didn't end up going into the water park, which I thought would have been very fun. But they did go play laser tag. Full party of furries, and they had to get like fitted for the vests and everything. Just straight face, like this is just another day. Just another day at work fitting furries for laser tag vests. Honestly,
that's awesome.
Probably was dying. I can't imagine how hot that was.
I get nothing but respect for furries. The commitment to wearing that hot ass suit.
It's so warm.
I can't even picture that.
One of them was a wolf furry, and they had like a tennis ball in their mouth. Really into the commitment to the bit there.
That's cute.
The only time I have no respect for them is when they decide to go to actual legitimate dog parks. If any furries are listening, do not do that, please.
Stop LARPing.
It freaks the dogs out.
Like there are dogs that have traumatic experiences from it. Don't do that, please.
Oh, no. I didn't want to know that was happening, Laura.
Hmm. Well, I can't unlearn that. Thank you.
Yeah, I could have lived my whole life
I would also like to blame Bella for getting us on this conversation.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Before we fully kind of get off, you know, get back on track, I just want to point out a quick Google search revealed that there is a book out there on Amazon right now. It's called Monster Nights, Velma and Daphne, Adult Tale of Scooby-Doo.
Adult what?
Tale of Scooby-Doo. I don't think it has
T-A-L-E.
T-A-L-E.
Okay, that's a distinction that needs to be made there.
It really did, and I appreciate you for understanding.
I can see it in your eyes.
Flabbergasted one word. What?
I heard it. I saw it in your eyes. I was like, oh, they didn't get that.
I didn't. No, thank you. T A L E. Very important.
So, speaking of tales. Renwick, that's the book that we're reading. There's a demon. There's a demon in Renwick, and we're back on the book that we're reading.
Yep.
So look at that.
To talk about that tale, you know what? I will say that they were creative with it. You know, was this our first book with anal?
No.
It is because we read Lord of Eternal Night, and I think the Kraken book did it, and I think a lot of the books that we've read have done it.
Soul Eater,
yeah.
Didn't Her Soul to Take have?
Yes, it did.
Oh, it did. You're right. Wow.
Anal's like pretty low on the kink list, so I think it kind of pops up in a lot of stuff.
I know. I don't know why this felt different with the tale. I was like, is this our first tale anal? But I guess it wasn't. Okay.
I think that actually also happened in the Gargoyle book. And the same thing happened.
We all know I deleted that from my brain. I didn't retain any of it.
Hmm. Still need to read the second one of that. I do plan on continuing that series. That was fun.
Okay, so wait, speaking of firsts, was this our first book with face sitting?
No, there's no way, right?
I think it was.
I think so. That cannot be possible.
I cannot recall another book.
No, that's depressing. Boo! All of the other books that we've read, not of everything, of the number of these books, and none of them have done that. Hmm. Cowards.
I did not think about that.
5-star book, if you ask me.
It was fun. It was cute. It was like, I really wish, like, I feel like the sex scenes that we got in this book almost felt like an outline for a sex scene. Like, there just wasn't any meat to it. No pun intended. Yeah. Like, it was just kind of like there were a few sentences about it. It wasn't very descriptive. It wasn't very long. And then it was over. And then you're like, oh, okay. And then even the one where you had like two sex scenes back to back, it was the same kind of thing. They were both very short, quick and to the point, and then we're out. And I was like, oh, well, I could have padded the page count a bit for that. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing I did like, and I don't know if this was in any of our previous books. First of all, we did get Holding of the Horns.
Yes. Mm.
Thank you.
Laura, you always bring that up.
I do, because I was waiting for it. Why would you not include that in your book if your character has horns?
We also got, which I didn't love as much, him using his horns on her.
I was going to mention that was different.
Is it not pointed? Because I'm worried here. You have something very sharp right up on her clit. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Okay, looking at the cover.
They're curved.
They're rounded. They curve behind his head.
So I think it was the friction and the ribbing.
Oh, fair, fair.
Yeah, the friction of the horn, I'm assuming.
I was like, this is a little bit.
Where it's coming out of his skull.
Okay, all right. I feel better about it. No. All right, no, we're good. Yeah, I was very nervous reading that part because I was like, I know it's not going to happen, but in my mind, it could, and it's freaking me out. But no, if they curve back like ram's horns, that's fine. Okay, never mind. I'm good.
But I thought that was interesting. I don't think any of our other books did something like that. It was a little weird, but it was different.
If you're going to have, I did think, as I was reading that scene, I was like, I feel like the human equivalent of this is like rubbing your ear on her. This is a little bit strange. It's like, what are we? Okay, sure.
I don't even know how to react to that.
I mean, it's just, if you have to imagine like the motion that he's doing and like where, like how that's, I'm just saying, it's basically,
might be a little
like,
weird.
It's a little, you know,
I think it's the ear for me, because I also recently learned that ear fucking is a thing. So,
oh, let's not. No, we're not talking about that.
I know.
No.
But I'm just
saying. Was fighting so hard to resist making a seashell to the ear reference, but you went straight to ear fucking. So.
Oh my God.
I'm just saying, like, I think that's what Emma, never. You know, we can move on.
No, let's stay on this for conservatively another 20 minutes, please.
The other thing I wanted to mention was I got really annoyed that we got the scenes where they each first have sex, right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The one with Ren was just with his tail. And then it skips another few weeks and we don't get like full sex scene with his peen. And I was really upset.
They didn't I was like, are they not having like full penetrative sex?
I was confused.
Because like with Silas, it made sense because they skipped like a week and I was like, okay. But then with Ren, they said they skipped 3 weeks. And I was like, okay, if we're tracking the trajectory of how like the timing's working here, are we not doing penetrative sex at all in any of this? And also that there's no reciprocity. Like in the sex scene, it's all about her and it's for her, which is great. And there's no reciprocity. And he's like, you know, not tonight. Like we're not doing that. But then for like the next 3 weeks, was it the same dynamic? Or did things change and we didn't get to see it? Like it's very unclear with the time skips. Which again, I think in erotica, which I wouldn't classify this book as erotica, by the way, but like in sort of sex forward romance novels, like the sex scene is the character development. So when you lose those sex scenes and you time skip it, I'm like, are we just yada yadding any of the character development here and like the relationship development?
Yada yada.
Yeah.
It's like sweet and fluffy, but I could have used a little more oomph to it.
Yeah.
It was especially jarring compared to the last book you read. That was all sex scenes.
Yes.
I think if I had read this a little bit more removed from that book, it wouldn't strike me as much. But that book was nothing but sex scenes. So I wanted a little bit more with this one, and I was getting nothing. Like the first sex scene I checked, I think it was like 50%.
It's pretty long. And I literally thought about you. I kept checking the percentage. We were like 35, 40% in. We hadn't had a sex scene. I was like, Rico's going to be mad. Rico's gonna be upset.
I mean, it's a short book, so you would think it would come sooner than later. If this was like a 350-page book, fine, fair enough. There's plenty of room to hit me with some good sex scenes. But like we're 100 pages in, and there's nothing yet.
Especially because Her Soul to Take is like 400 and some pages, and you don't get the first sex scene for 30%, and you were upset about it. You were mad about it.
Well,
someone did not forget about that.
I did not.
Jesus, seriously. Mm-hmm. That was earlier in my, adult book career. I didn't have as many to compare with.
Fair enough.
You know, I was under the impression I was getting sex, like, within the first, like, page or two. And I was upset that I didn't get it for 30 pages or 30%.
But it's fair. Like you just said, we just read this other book that is very similar and was just sex. So I do agree that going from reading that book to this book, it was really nice to have that extra plot in the beginning before we got to the sex scenes.
I agree.
If we could have gotten like the sweet, fluffy, light and filling plot of this book and the sex scenes of the last book and taken both of them, like that's good. That's what we're looking for here, it seems like.
Yes.
Because like that was a book that you read it and you're like, the sex in this is really good, but like it's trying to pretend to have a plot and it's not working. And then this is one where you're like, okay, it's like, I wouldn't even say it's pretending to have a plot. Like it does have a plot. It's not, you know, crazy substantial, but it's enough for what this book needs to be. But then the sex scenes just don't really live up to kind of like give any oomph to it, give any like seasoning to it. Yeah. And so if we could just combine the two, that would be great. That would be so great. That would have been so much fun.
That would be such a good book.
This book was giving me cozy vibes. Like, is cozy smut a thing?
Like, Kimberly Lemming is cozy smut.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't like her, though.
We read That Time I Got Drunk and Saved a Demon. Or Dragon. Whatever the hell that book was.
Saved a Demon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so she is, as far as I can tell at this point, the only, like, kind of notable sort of popular name in cozy smut at the moment. Like she's kind of got the market cornered on that for the time being. I think cozy and smutty kind of goes together. Apparently the Pumpkin Spice Cafe, which I know zero about except that it's supposed to be like cozy smut, is kind of doing that. So if anybody wants to check that out, that is not a recommendation. I have no idea what that book is about. I just keep hearing it.
I didn't realize that was smutty. It does not look smutty at all.
It does not. It does not.
Wow, we could have read this instead.
What'd you say it was called?
The Pumpkin Spice Cafe.
Lori Gilmore. Lorelai Gilmore? It's a pretty obvious pseudonym, if you ask me.
So I don't know that I would, I mean, I don't know that I would class this as cozy. I think there is a fine line between fluff and cozy, and I feel like this falls on the side of fluff, but maybe not cozy.
Yeah. I agree. I think fluff, not cozy.
Mm.
Potentially. There is some amount, and like, and I think there's also like some amount of emotional, you know, sort of storytelling in this. Not that cozy doesn't have that, but like if we're talking about fluff, like there is some amount of emotional storytelling in this. This doesn't count. I did cry reading this book, but I also think I must be about to start my period because I was like so sad. I was just sort of, it was literally the scene where she's like, it was when she freaks out over the, over her, like, the training scene, and, like, she freaks out, and I was like, she must be so scared of herself, and she's having such a hard time, and I can't imagine, and I just started crying, and I was like, I must be about to start my period.
It was not that deep.
It truly wasn't. It truly, there was like, no reason.
Yeah. Objective, like, I'm not here to invalidate your feelings, but, like, objectively, that was not that deep.
I had complete opposite. I was like, girl, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, there was.
Do you guys get that though? Like, I can tell when it's coming because, like, suddenly I start just crying at literally anything for no reason. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I know I'm not a weak ass bitch. What's going on here? Something's happening.
Oh, my.
And I'm like, oh, that's why. Okay.
Okay. Can we talk about, speaking of sad things? Can we talk about how third act breakup didn't exist? Really?
Love it.
There was like an 80% of the way through, I think, was like when they had the confrontation where she sees Silas and Ren in the library.
That's kind of like, where it was.
I think that was like the third act breakup,
that
but
was,
it was more like
it
that was more like a 4/5 of the way through conflict. And I was fine with it. It felt organic. Like they did. She kept saying like we had to have this talk at some point. And I was like, yes, you did. Like you were in an open relationship with two people who previously were having sex. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel
about
like
it.
That was this book's sort of like replacement for a third act breakup because they weren't even together at that point. Like the three of them were not together. So there was no like breakup. Like that was the conflict that got them sort of to talk to each other. And I think that worked.
I think it worked too. I liked it. I was curious how you felt about it.
It worked. I think it works a lot better than a third act breakup. Like it just feels more natural. If we could just free romance from the shackles of the third act breakup, stop it. Don't need it.
I don't know why it exists. Other than, again, for the drama. But, like, it's not that deep, y'all. It's set. Like, move on.
I don't think. So, our trigger warnings for this, the only really content warning that we had for this that was any way kink-related was light bondage and primal kink. And, like, I guess there was primal because they did the running and the chasing, which, honestly, I always think is very cute and fun. But, like,
it didn't really come off primal.
It did not come off primal because it was cute and fun. It wasn't really, like, animalistic in any way.
No.
Yeah.
But light and fluffy.
Yeah, I think, I think overall this book was a great intro to a lot of new content, new tropes for people. It's easy to read, not super offensive. I did flag the consent at times was a little iffy or like retroactive. There were a couple instances. Not in a bad way. I just think like, we've read some really good consent books. And so this one, I was like, like a 3 or 4 out of 5.
There was no discussion of like kink consent, which like if you're engaging in kink of any kind, you have to have that conversation ahead of time. The book did put in the sort of like it made sure that in a couple instances, there was basically, we said like, if we do anything you don't like, say no. Like, just tell us and we'll stop.
That's what I mean.
Which
there
is
was
good.
Like retroactive.
Yeah. Like, it's good to have that in there. That's kind of like the bar is on the floor kind of thing. It's kind of like the bare minimum. Yeah.
That's why I was like 3 out of 5. I'm like, it's a C average on consent. It's not bad. It's better than, I'm sure, a lot of people's real life experiences. So it's still a fantasy. But we've read some much better kink consent and just consent in general.
There were a number of times where I was like, just have a conversation. Just have a conversation about like literally anything.
The like breath play was very much like at one point, like it was like it happened and then it was like, do you like this? And I was like, you need to ask before you do that. That's not something you just like jump into. Like you don't know people's experience. So that was definitely where I was like, ooh, red flags for this book. But again, it was like, okay, at least there was an ask after.
Yeah.
3 out of 5.
I enjoy that he asked if she was on birth control. I don't think that's has that come up in any books we've read yet?
It has it? Must you. Have.
It has,
There's
yeah.
been a few.
So she has an implant. I do like that romance as a genre is getting away from the word clean. We're not really using the word clean anymore. Or, well, a lot of people aren't using the term clean. However, this definitely went in the in the way of protected. And by the time he asked if she was protected, he had already anally penetrated her. And I was like, this was a conversation we needed to have beforehand. This is a question you need to ask before this. Because, again, like, and it's... It does kind of imply the idea that condoms only work to prevent pregnancy, which is not the case. So there I was, that moment where like he asked, you know, are you protected? Or she said, I'm protective. And it's like, cool. You've already been penetrated by them multiple times at this point. Why we are late on this question.
So that goes back to what we talked about a little bit ago. Does that mean they've never had penetrative sex before that then?
I guess.
I don't think they had. I think it was all for her pleasure at that point.
I get that seems for Very 3 weeks straight, like some reciprocity in a relationship.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. Off screen or off page. We don't know.
Yeah, I guess that
he doesn't ask her that
he was asking for the first time. So that does imply that they have not had penetrative sex before this. And whether they were doing other things other than penetrative sex and there was reciprocity, STDs. We have to assume. But yeah, like there's, again, I think a lot of romance authors tend to kind of miss that. Like we are moving away from the term clean, which is good. And I think we also need to add in like moving into condoms are for more than pregnancy. Like we're inching our way slowly through sex education.
Yeah. Because I understand it's a fantasy, but like if people are reading this and learning anything from these books, I do hope it's about like safe sex in general. Yeah.
And like, I don't think necessarily that romance writing needs to be prescriptive, but if you're going to go so far as to like have that conversation, if you're going to have the question of like protection, then like acknowledge what the protection is for. Cause it's not just the pregnancy and you have already, like you're literally asking that after you put your dick in her already. So like, what are we doing?
Listen, if romance as a genre has made consent sexy, I think we can make contraception and STD protection sexy with these books as well. Like just modeling it. Like, and yeah, there's so many ways to do it, to ask. There are lots of options. Yeah.
I just read, I think, oh, I was, because you and I were both reading a Lana Ferguson book at the same time. We're reading different ones.
Oh, I finished mine.
Oh, you did? We'll talk about it. I'm very excited. So I just read The Game Changer, and that was one that I think was maybe, it must not have been the first time, but maybe it was that they have the conversation of STD testing, and they don't use clean. They don't use the term, like, because a lot of what you'll see is, oh, I'm clean. And we're kind of moving away from that. And I think this is the first time I've seen in a published romance novel where they use the term positive. They're like, I'm negative for everything. So they use the terminology of positive and negative for a testing rather than clean or not clean, which we're kind of trying to move away from as it like sort of stigmatizes STDs as like dirty and not clean.
Yeah. I love that.
Hmm. Yeah, a little tangent about Lana Ferguson.
Love. You always find a way.
All right.
Always find a way to sprinkle in a megaverse.
Why not?
Well, you have yet to ask. What was our favorite sex scene?
Oh, that's right. Because they were like, okay.
It's anyway. Like three, what
was
your, maybe?
It was like three. No, okay. I so know. There's the sex scene. Okay, here's our options. The sex scene with Silas. The sex scene with Ren.
Five.
The sex scene with the three of them for the first time, followed immediately by the sex scene with the three of them for the second time, and then a epilogue sex scene. Mm-hmm. So those are our five options. Bella, where do you land on those?
Probably like the second... Or sorry, the first and second time where they were all together.
Those like two back to back.
Yeah, were the best ones, I think. I see them as one sex scene. Yeah, I know that they are technically two, but yeah. So I think that was the best. The epilogue was fine. It just felt rushed. It felt glossed over.
The only reason I count those as two different sex scenes is because it like specifically tells you they like went to the bathroom and like the three of them like showered and cleaned up together. And then immediately he starts moving on her again. I was like, I just showered. Like, what are we doing?
I know. I was like, y'all didn't even go to sleep. Like, that's a lot.
I'm imagining that like they were just in bed and they're like, I've just showered. We just changed the sheets. Like, stop it.
Rico was like nodding his head. He looked like he was thinking. Rico, what were you thinking about?
No, I agree with you. I think it's a toss up between the first time all three were together and the second time. There were things about each one I enjoyed.
They were different. Yeah. I will say they were like different acts and vibes, but yeah, they, to me, it felt like one big sex scene.
Cause the first one, they were both having penetrative sex with her. Right. And the second one, Rand was having penetrative sex with Silas, correct?
Yes.
I believe so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're very different. And then we have the face sitting in one and yeah, both of them, I think they're tied for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think those are the only ones that like actually had stuff going on.
Yeah. That had like any real substance to them.
And was more like descriptive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. So rating wise, how do we feel about this? Rico, what's your rating?
I'm going to give it like just using my little fucking algorithm. 3.63.
3.63. Oh my God. Okay, whatever. Bella, what's your normal rating for this book?
this is tricky. It's between 3.5 and 4 stars. I think the 4 being that great. Like, it was a fun time. I would recommend this to people, especially someone who's like, I want to get into monster fucking smut. I'd be like, this is a really great intro. Like, it's very light.
I agree with that.
So yeah, no real qualms with it other than like the couple we've obviously flagged, but like doesn't hurt my overall enjoyment of the book. And it did feel less intense than the Cosmic Kiss, like where it was all sex all the time. And I came out of it like punch drunk. I was like, what the fuck did I just read? Like, I could not tell you how many sex scenes were in that book. So yeah, it was kind of like a nice little After Dark palate cleanser in a lot of ways. So okay. I enjoyed it. So like 3.5, 4 stars.
Okay. Yeah. Laura, where are you at on it?
Same. I'd probably say 3.5, but Goodreads only does full stars. So I'd probably go up to 4 because I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, same.
I think I'd probably do the same. I think I'm a 3.5. I'd probably do on Goodreads, I'd probably do a 3. And then like in the little review, I'm like, oh, it's actually a 3.5, but rounded down for Goodreads. Yeah, I think it's light and fluffy. It does what it sets out to do. It's a fun way to kill a few hours in the, you know, whatever. And you've got some free time. Mm-hmm. Not a bad read. We've had worse. We've had much worse.
We have. This is true.
I feel like this is like very middle of the ground, like very, very middle of the pack for our read, which is not bad.
It was safe, but still good.
Yes. Yeah. Which I think is, to Bella's point, why it works so well as like a beginner intro. Like you've got enough of the, you have just enough going on with the sort of otherness of monster romance. You've got the shadows and the tail and the thing without like being too out there and too far from what you're maybe used to reading in romance novels. Mm-hmm. So yeah, would recommend this for like a beginner monster romance.
Level one.
A level one. So I do believe that is the end of our Halloween episode. And I think our next episode is also going to be holiday, right? Is Christmas our next episode?
Christmas, yeah, December.
So for the holiday special, For the holiday special, we are going to be reading Railed by the Krampus by Dahlia Davies.
Wow, I wonder who suggested that book.
I just make the list. We all vote on them. Emma is pouring a big glass of wine after saying that title. You can't blame me. Okay, we're in this together.
I absolutely can. Well, because I also didn't vote for this book, so, you know. I voted for the Hanukkah book. I'm just going to put it out there.
So did I.
So inclusive and so diverse of you, Emma. Okay.
Look, to be fair, he took the books that had the most votes and stuck them on the wheel. So...
Blame the wheel.
That's how it happened.
Always blame. And that's why we use a wheel. So we have someone, something to blame.
Possible deniability. Absolutely.
Well, if you've made it this far, if you're still with us, thank you for listening. Happy Halloween. Happy holidays. Let us know your thoughts on the book on social media. This was Monster's Manor by Lee Miller. Took me a second to remember that one. You can find us on social media at Shit We've Read on Instagram and on TikTok. You can find us on Discord, which is linked in all of those places. You can find me specifically at Emma Skies. And I think that is us. Are we good?
That's it.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
Bye.
Shit We've Read After Dark is hosted by Laura Benson, Jason Rico, Bella Romero, and Emma Skies, with an introduction by Jessalie Windhouse and editing by Jason Rico.
To join the discussion, find us at Shit We've Read on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
For more information about us or to request transcripts, please visit shitreadred.com.
This podcast is part of the Buy Low Network. Visit BYLONetwork.com for more great geeky podcasts.
And thank you so much for listening.